Guys, welcome to The Pulse, back again to have the conversations we have with people doing big things, entertainers, comedians, actors, you name it. We've got them on The Pulse, and today we've got somebody who falls into all those kind of characters. I'm going to ask about the title that I read that Brad Williams was given, but he joins us here on The Pulse. How are you, sir?
Doing great, and I do appreciate the fact that right in the intro, you're having a dwarf on your show, and you already told your audience that I'm doing big things. That makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside, because normally that adjective is not used to describe almost anything I do.
That's not where we start, generally speaking.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. I appreciate you doing this, and welcome to the show. Tell us about, I was reading, as I always do, about people's backgrounds. Your start in comedy, and not, you know, you have a daddy issue special that goes way background, but your comedy background got started in an interesting way with Carlos Mencia.
Oh, yeah. This is way back in the day. This is like 18 years ago. I went to see a comedy show of his. I remember I took my dad. It was Father's Day weekend of 2003. And I took my dad to see a live comedy show. And he was on stage. Mencia was on stage making midget jokes. And half the audience is laughing. And the audience sitting by me is like, and like they're not laughing. And he notices that. And he goes, why aren't you guys laughing? These funny jokes. He goes, what? Is one of them here? And I just raised my creepy little hand in the air like, hey, yes. And
I'm here.
Yeah, and he didn't flinch. He immediately called me up on stage, and he started asking me questions. Now, I wasn't trying to be funny. I wasn't like, ooh, this is a little bit I can do. No, I just answered the questions he asked honestly, and they got laughs from the audience. And when that happened, I was like, oh, this is it. This is my gig. I remember he asked me, he goes, so what do you do for a living? And at the time, I was 19 years old, and I was working at Disneyland. And I said, I'm born and raised in Orange County, California. So I said, I'm working at Disneyland. And I heard some snickers in the audience. And then I just turned to the audience and said, shut up, I'm not one of the seven. And then they laughed like you did. And I was like, ooh, that felt good. And so immediately after that, I started looking up open mic nights. And I think it was like 2 weeks later, I went up, did my first open mic at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, California. And 18 years later, in a couple of weeks, it'll be 19 years. My goodness. 19 years later, I'm still doing stand-up comedy. What's a real job?
Wow. So that wasn't even, and in reading that story, it didn't put it in its appropriate context. So you weren't even trying to be a comedian at that point. You were just there to see the show.
Yeah, I was just there to see the show. And then, I was doing open mics for about a year and a half, and then got another break. And then, as you know, in this business, people always say, like, what was your big break? And it's like, well, it's not one big thing. It's like the thing that leads to the thing that leads to the thing that leads to the thing. So that just kind of set me on my path. And, yeah, like I said, 19 years, I've never really had a real job. I've worked at Disneyland and stand-up comedy. So pretty much, oh, and then – also, when I was 16, I worked as a cashier at Hot Topic, if you know what that clothing store is. Yeah, so if you know Hot Topic, it's like a lot of like, it's like goth, it's weird hair, it's gauges, it's piercings, it's tattoos. And I pretty much dressed more or less how I dress now. And I just walked in and they're like, well, a dwarf, that's a weird body modification. That's good enough. And then I worked there for a little while. So I've never really had a real job. It's been a great life.
That's not a bad thing though, right? You've just been living the dream from that moment.
I mean, whether it be at Disneyland or whether it be a comedian, I've just been a professional idiot for 19 years. I've found out a way to get paid for it. There's that old slogan, like, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And that's true for a lot of reasons, because I mean, don't tell Helium Comedy Club in Philadelphia, but I would do this for free. It's very fun.
Yeah. You learn really not to say that. Like, I've said that before. Like, I love what I do, and I've made the mistake of saying on the air that, oh, I love this job. Yeah. I would do it for free. And then contract negotiations come up. like, remember how much you love this job?
Yeah, because the business, we need you to take a little bit of a cut so the higher ups can keep their golf club membership. I completely get that, completely understand.
I was reading, and we're going to talk about all the different things you've done for people who may only be familiar with you from one thing or another. But when I'm doing the research that I often do, and they described you as pound for pound the funniest comedian on earth, and I'm reading that and I'm going, so is that a compliment? Like if he was bigger, he wouldn't be so funny? Like what?
Yeah, it's like pound for pound or inch for inch in terms of the tail of the tape. I mean, yeah, I guess I might be. I might be the most funny packed and do those. Like, you know how they have those like cookies that you can buy at the health food store that like, this is a day's worth of nutrition in one cookie. Like, and it's like a very small thing. Like, I'm kind of like that. I'm like, this is an hour's worth of hilarity into the tiniest package possible. And,
so that's it's a compliment then.
I'll take it as a compliment, but yeah, you kind of look at if you look at Bruce, would you be like, does he have to be that much funnier to be the pound for pound? Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's got to be so much funnier than I have to be. To be the quote unquote pound for pound champion. So and he pretty much is. So
it was one of those things. It was one of those things that you read, and you're preparing for the interview, and I go, I'm not sure about introducing somebody like that.
Yeah, by that math, I'm way funnier than Gabriel Iglesias. But I don't think that's true. But by the math, whatever.
Yeah, makes sense, right?
Exactly.
Most of the late night shows, you've had your own comedy tours. You just got finished doing a Cirque du Soleil kind of thing. Like, describe all the things you've done.
Don't gloss over Cirque du Soleil, my friend. I was the first comedian ever in a Cirque du Soleil show. That's in Las Vegas. And just so people are clear, I was doing stand-up comedy in the Cirque du Soleil show. People see me and they hear Cirque du Soleil, they think I'm getting fired out of a cannon in tights going wee-wee. like that's not what I was doing. So I was doing stand-up comedy and like I said, first comedian ever in a Cirque show. But they kind of made it bigger than it actually was. Like, they made it out to be like they would do these press releases and be like, it's the first time we've ever done this. It's truly revolutionary. A comedian in a Cirque du Soleil show. Like, you put a dwarf in the circus. Like, it's not that big of a deal. It's kind of a lateral move, let's be honest. So no big whoop. But it was a lot of fun. I did it for 4 months. I hope to be back at the show. Is called Mad Apple. It's at the New York Hotel and Casino in Vegas. And I hope to be back in 2023. But it's really interesting when you're a stand-up comic and you're in a Cirque du Soleil show, you just have to be really fine. You have to be okay with being the ugliest person in the cast. Because everyone in a Cirque show is gorgeous. They're all physical specimens. We had one guy that came down from the ceiling and then he would like take off his shirt and he had a 24-pack and the audience would just give him a standing ovation. He didn't have to do anything. He ended up doing incredible acrobatics. But, like, that's all he had to do was just be like, I am buff and I am Russian. Like, that's all he had to do. It's weird because you would have these people. There was these two brothers who would, I don't know how to describe what they would do. They would juggle each other with their feet. So what they would do, one brother would lay on his back and then, like, kind of like a seal with a ball with his legs, just juggle the other one with his feet. And then they do that. And then they see me do comedy and I get off stage and they both walk up to me and they go, I don't know how you do what you do. And I'm like, what?
See, that's awesome though. So you're getting the respect for being a part of a show like that.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
It's, Yeah, it's just very strange because it just shows, like, whatever your normal is, you don't find that impressive because, like, they juggle each other with their feet and they're like, yeah, I've been doing this since I was 7. No big deal. You tell jokes in front of strangers and make them laugh. How does that work? And it's like, I don't know. It was a crazy experience, but I'm definitely glad to be back on the road. Glad to be coming to fantastic clubs like the Helium Comedy Club in Philadelphia.
Absolutely. Last week and in September into the first day in October, here for a couple of days. I'm sure sold out shows, people can go ahead. They're not sold out yet, but they will be sold out.
Yeah, well, they will. That's the thing is I always tell people, like, buy the tickets early because it's weird to get a Facebook message from someone going, hey, what the heck? I tried to buy tickets the day of the show and you sold out. And they're like mad at me for it. I don't know. It's like, I'm sorry. I should not be as popular. Yeah. I don't get it.
A little less successful would be better for you.
Yeah. it would make your life easier. So you can just show up day of show. So buy the tickets early. That is my advice.
You talked about, it's interesting that the people jugglers with their feet. We're talking about how did you get to do what you do or how did you get to be who you are? It's interesting because you talk about you were not a comedian and Carlos Mencia talks about you and you just go with it. You know, you've had different comedy shows. The Daddy Issues one that one of my producers was talking to me about. You share kind of your upbringing and how you got to be this person. I don't know if that story per se is funny, but you made it into funny kind of becoming you. Like, how did you get to the point where you were this comfortable in your own skin?
Well, I mean, it's sort of a sink or swim situation when you look a little bit different. And I don't know if people can tell because we just have a headshot right now with the camera. And because it's Zoom, of course, I'm not wearing pants. But, no, I am. This is not... I am.
We'll keep the close up.
This is not going to be a Jeffrey Toobin situation. Calm down. You kind of get comfortable because you have to be, because as a dwarf, as a little person, I will have people staring at me all day. I will have awkward, weird questions all day. So you kind of get comfortable. And my parents, the reason why I called the special that you speak of Daddy Issues is because my dad pretty much taught me how to deal with that. Now, my dad is not a little person. Dwarves don't have to have other dwarves. We don't all come from the same tribe. Okay. Like you can't drive down the street and be like, well, which house do the dwarves live in? Oh, right. It's the mushroom with the door in it. Like that's not how it works. But my dad was mature enough and smart enough to know that I would be different. He didn't try to sugarcoat it and be like, you're just like everybody else. Like, no, he knew that kids would make fun of me. So what he did is he taught me humor and he taught me disarm people with a joke. And if anyone ever makes fun of you, always have a comeback, always have something that's right there, ready to go. And you can really get back at someone that way. And so from, I remember my first day of kindergarten, I walked in and one of the kids just ran up to me and went, ha ha, you're little. And I looked at him and went, ha ha, your mom doesn't live with your dad anymore. And
that discussion.
Yeah, I grew up in Orange County, California. I had about a 75% chance of getting that one right. And I did. And the kid cried and I got sent to the principal's office because I had the better comeback. And I remember the principal actually called my dad, who was like, oh, I'm going to call your father. And I'm just sitting there like, bring it. Like, let's go. And the principal called my dad and explained to him the situation. And my dad, there was a pause on the other end. And then my dad said, well, did my son start it or did he finish it? And then the principal said, well, technically he finished it. And then my dad said, well, I got no problem then. Click. And then just like hung up on the principal. And that was like, all right, dad's got my back, let's go. So so my dad pretty much taught me how to be comfortable and how to embrace the sort of difference that some people would shy away from. So I don't know if you remember the movie 8 Mile. In the rap battle scene, mm-hmm. Eminem takes takes all the ammo away from his opponent away by making fun of himself. He says all the things that the other guy would have said, and now the guy's got nothing to say. And that's a really true tactic. And my dad kind of taught me that tactic very early. If I make a joke early, if I meet you and I do a quick dwarf joke, now you don't have anything on me, because now you have to really get creative. Now you can't just make a short joke. So it's a great strategy, and it's really served me well.
And it has, you see your show, and that's not all that you talk about, but that is a big part of your show.
Yeah, that'd be very boring if I was just on stage for an hour going like, I could take a bath in a thimble. That's weird. Like, it's not that show at all. But I do have to mention it, because if I go on stage and I don't mention dwarfism at all, then the crowd is just sitting there like, does he know? Does he know? And it's like, yes, I'm aware. I've lived. So, yes, I will mention it. I will bring it up, and then I will move on, and we'll talk about a bunch of different other topics during my show. So if you buy a ticket to see me live, it's not going to be all dwarf jokes. It'll be race, it'll be sex, it'll be politics. Not a lot of politics. I don't really like to divide the room
More than we already are.
Yeah, and I'm not that smart, you know. Like, some comedians are really smart. They can talk about that stuff. They're like, and I have friends that watch the news. They're like, Brad, did you see what he said today? And I'm like, no. and they're like, well, it was on every channel. I'm like, was it on Pornhub? I was watching Pornhub. Like, that's what I was watching. So I'm sorry. I'm sure that's
okay. Stay away from that. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, I just
I laugh, but no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll go and do a bevy of topics during my live show. So I wouldn't worry about me just focusing on the dwarfism the entire time.
But it's interesting, because I saw an interview that you did, and there's a whole, like, in some ways, and I guess this is relatable. I know that I've joked with people, the African-American community, anything that happens in the African-American community, people will kind of look around and go, what do you think, Bill? And I'm like, I'm not sure when I was elected spokesperson for the entire community. You know, it's to a whole different level. That's what happens anytime there's an issue regarding little people. Somebody wants to know what you think.
Yeah. I wasn't at the meeting where I was elected leader, but apparently the votes were in. And I only think I'm the spokesman because Peter Dinklage is too busy. And his invoice is way more expensive than mine. So they can't go to him. So whenever there's a dwarf story, I am the de facto spokesman, which is a lot of pressure, because I'm sure, like you, when your white friends look at you and be like, so what does the black community think about this, Bill? You're like, I don't know.
What had happened was.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I don't speak for the dwarf community. Everyone has their own opinion. Like, for instance, there's a word that you're not supposed to use to describe little people, which is the word midget. Okay. Now, a lot of little people do not like that word. They strongly oppose that word. Myself, personally, this is where I differ from a lot of people on a lot of different topics. I don't mind the word if it's used in context. Like, to me, it's all about the context. I'll tell you this story, Bill. One time I was doing a show in McAllen, Texas. And if you want to know where McAllen, Texas is, start doing meth. You'll end up in McAllen, Texas. Okay? Like, that's kind of how that goes.
Got it.
So I was doing a show, and there was a guy who heckled me. And we ended up getting him kicked out. And then I thought nothing of it, finished my show. When the show's done, I'm walking out to my car, and pickup truck lights turn on. And this truck just starts roaring towards us. And a guy leans out the window and yells out, kill the dwarf. Now, when he said that, I didn't stop and go, why, thank you for using the proper terminology in calling us dwarves, because that's what we are. I have a chondroplastic dwarfism. Like, no, it wasn't the dwarf part that offended me. It was the kill the. Right. That's what made me a little uncomfortable. Thankfully, I was able to get in the car, and the opening act was driving, and he's a good country boy, so he knew you go in a field, you do some donuts, and then they lose you. Smart man. So that's how we got out of there safe.
Wow.
But so in terms of the terminology, I'm okay with a lot of words as long as the context is okay. Some people don't like the word midget. To me, I don't know. This is horrible. Don't listen to this. But midget to me sounds like the best of the three terms. Like we say dwarf, little person, midget. To me, little person sounds condescending because it's like, you're a little person. Yes, you are. You're like a person, a little. Like it's like that. And then dwarf has like a lot of like you think I'm going to have a pickaxe and be a diamond miner and protect some lady named Snow. That's what that connotation is. Like midget to me sounds nice and almost sounds French. Like my friend is a midget. It's nice. So
okay. So it varies depending on who you're talking to.
So I say all that to sort of emphasize the fact that I'm not the spokesman for the dwarf community. Do not come to see my show and then assume like, well, that's what they all think. No, not at all. So I speak on behalf of me. I speak on behalf of my family, and that is about it.
Yeah, it's interesting because you take on tough issues. Like you talked about, you know, dwarfism or what have you. It's one of the things you take on. You take on racial issues, not so much the politics. Try to stay away from that. We got somebody in the room.
My daughter, hey, come here. my daughter just got back from a walk.
Oh.
So that's her. So that's the baby. And that's our friend who is interviewing Daddy. Okay. Yep. Yeah. So she just got back in the room. So if you were about to say something very controversial with slurs, go right ahead.
Yeah. Go right ahead. Does it make it? I wasn't, but does it make it? Does it make it easier? I mean, easier probably is overstating it. But you take on all those different issues. People are oftentimes, you know, the African American community. Accepting various communities accepting. We'll edit that out. No worries. Does it make it easier that you've kind of dealt with these different challenges? You're open about these different challenges and then talk about the humor in other people's challenges as well. Have communities kind of embraced your ability to do that?
Yeah. Thankfully, when you're, I have the feeling as the underdog or the other, and I'm not alone in that. You don't necessarily have to have dwarfism to feel that way. You can be of a different race, a different sexual orientation, a different gender, a different ability, and also feel like the underdog or the other or the outsider. So I feel like a lot of people hear sort of my perspective, and you don't just have to be a dwarf to be like, yeah, he speaks for me. It's like, yeah, a lot of people have felt disenfranchised in some way and can kind of identify with that.
Yeah.
So it's don't think that if you show up to my show, it's just going to be all dwarves in the audience and it's just going to be a theater full of booster seats. Like it's not going to be that at all. It's going to be all people. It's going to be all races, all genders, all sides of the aisle. And I don't want to be the comedian for just little people or just the left or just the right. Like I want anyone to be able to come to my show, forget about their problems for an hour and just have a good time.
And it's okay. It sounds like you're very comfortable with people laughing with you or some who are not sure if they're laughing with or at and along.
Yeah. Well, and one of the reasons why is because the brilliant part about stand-up comedy is that in stand-up, I'm the writer, I'm the producer, I'm the actor. It's not someone else who is not a little person putting words in my mouth. It's all me. So if we're in a comedy club, I want you to laugh. If you will never offend a comedian by laughing. We'll never be like, wait, that wasn't funny. Like, no, we want you to laugh. Even at parts that maybe I don't find funny. If you find them funny, go right ahead. Have a great time. So yes, I enjoyed the whole process, and I will not be offended if you laugh at my show.
Give us a little taste. You kind of given the overview, but you're going to be at Helium. You're touring around. No, you gave us a brief expectation, but we know Daddy Issues focused on one thing, and sure. You know, doing the Cirque show, you focused on another thing. What are you focusing on for this one?
Yeah, there's kind of two overall themes, I would say. It's the sort of the political correctness of the day and people being afraid to say certain things and cancel culture and things of that nature. And then also, you saw a brief example. I'm a dad now, and when you're a dad, your life changes dramatically, and you definitely get a new perspective on things. And I have a 2.5-year-old, and she does funny stuff pretty much every day. So it's definitely providing a lot of material.
Sounds like people just come in, enjoy all the new stories that we've got, and we just met your daughter.
Yes, as I've always said, like, I'm not a good joke writer when it comes to writing jokes. Step one, be a dwarf. Step two, wait. And then just funny stuff is going to happen to you, and you'll be able to take that to the stage.
A couple of more things we wanted to discuss. You're not the advocate or champion for all things dwarf or dwarfism,
nope.
Or whatever. But we're
nope.
In Philly. And we don't like the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones. And not too long ago, you kind of fired back at Jerry Jones for some stuff that he said. Tell us about this.
Yes, I did. And this, like, I'm on Twitter. I just throw stuff out there. I'm not expecting anything to go viral or widespread or anything like that. All I did was Jerry Jones was at a press conference, I believe, during training camp. And he called someone who is, excuse me for 1 second. Mm-hmm. My daughter is kind
of
making some noise.
Take
we'll stop and then I'll and I'll come right back here.
Do you want to go to the other room?
I can't.
Okay.
The lighting doesn't work. It's
got
not.
It. Okay.
It's not great. So we can go to the other room. Yeah. I know. So just cut this part.
We will absolutely cut that and accommodate as much as possible, and we'll be done very shortly.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
All right,
we'll wrap up shortly.
Trying to get the back.
We gotta take care. You gotta take care of it. We don't want her to have daddy issues. So you do what you gotta do.
Exactly. What was the question?
Jerry Jones? Sorry. You went at Jerry Jones.
Yeah. So once again, when something happens in the dwarf world, I'm kind of the de facto spokesperson, whether I like to or not. And I'm just putting jokes out on Twitter. I see things. I write a quick joke. I'm not expecting anything to go viral. I'm not expecting people to pick it up and really run with it. But Jerry Jones was at Dallas Cowboys training camp. And there was someone who works on the staff. And this was like their first time ever missing training camp. Like, they're not there this year. And he called him a midget. He's like, we don't have our little midget running around anymore. Like, and he said a comment like that. And people were saying, like, hey, Brad, did you see this? I got tweeted that story so many times. So I just responded and I retweeted the story and said, hey, when someone offends you, it's important to have empathy, not necessarily anger. It's important to have empathy. It's important to find common ground. And Jerry Jones and I surprisingly have a lot in common. Like, for instance, we both haven't won a Super Bowl in over 25 years.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah. And thankfully or unthankfully, whatever you want to say, there's a lot of cowboy haters out there. So that story went viral. And there were several sports radio shows in Dallas that picked that up. They were like, oh, who's Brad Williams? And I'm just like, great.
Right.
I'm coming to Dallas in a few weeks. So hopefully I sell some tickets there and I'll repeat the same joke to their faces. I do not care. My general philosophy is that if you're ever telling a joke and then when the person that the joke is about comes near you, if you stop telling the joke, that's not a good joke. You should not tell that joke. I will tell any joke who the joke is about to that person. And if Dallas fans want to know my thoughts, I will let them know. Actually, what did I say that was factually incorrect?
Well, I was just about to say, how do you even counter that? You're going to say, that guy is too honest. He tells too much truth.
he said things that are statistically accurate. It's like, no. Yes,
what are you gonna say? Tell me,
yes, you can come back at me and say, well, Jerry Jones can ride more roller coasters than you. True, very true. That is also an accurate statement. So yeah, I was just spitting facts.
It's a true story. It's a true story.
Exactly.
You got a problem? Win. Like that, then it won't be true anymore. That
winning solves everything. Because that was the knock that they always had against Eagle fans, is that you guys had never won a Super Bowl, and now they can't say that anymore.
So that's right.
And you've won one. The people that were born the year that you guys won the Super Bowl are like 3 or 4 years old. They're not even in kindergarten yet. The people who were born the last time the Cowboys won a Super Bowl are voting. They've completed jobs. They've been married some twice.
Right. They got kids who are smart enough to be Eagles fans now.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I'm not saying anything that's not factually correct.
Couple more things and we will go ahead and wrap it up. I know we've got, sure, we've got a little lady waiting for you, so we will go.
Yes, I do.
Little person. See now, yep. There we go. Now, little person, I meant because she's a child.
Yeah, she's a little person. She's two.
Right. Like, then you put it out there and go, uh-oh.
Yeah, and then she also happens to be a little person. Like, she happens to have dwarfism as well, which... By the way, Asian dwarf baby, those things, my baby isn't even a baby. She's a Pokemon. She's adorable. It's great. I love her.
See, again, things that you can say that I can laugh at with.
But like the Jerry Jones thing, statistically, like, I'm not saying anything that's false. My wife is Chinese. I'm a little person. We have an Asian dwarf baby. It's great. Asian dwarf baby. She's two. She already got into 14 colleges. It's fantastic.
All right. One more. We always end the segment by the concept of use your voice for good. You've done multiple things, from advocating for people to making people laugh daily to, like, you name it. But when you hear use your voice for good, is there something specific that resonates with you?
Well, there's something that I do after my shows that kind of works into this topic. So whenever my shows are done, I always do a free meet and greet. So if people want to come up, say hi to me, take a photo, get an autograph. I like meeting people. But there's one rule I always say to people if you want to take a photo with me. It's a very important rule. I have to say it at every show. You cannot pick me up. Okay? Like... Yes, I'm tiny, and you might think I'm light, even though I'm kind of built like a bowling ball. But I am a 38-year-old man. I'm a new dad. Do not try to reenact your favorite scene from The Lion King. Like, don't do that. So I say that, but I say, if you do want to pick me up, here's how you do it. There is a wonderful charity called Project Sanctuary. And what Project Sanctuary does, it helps soldiers coming home from conflict deal with PTSD and give them a lot of resources to help with their mental health. Wonderful charity, constantly named a top 5 military charity. And what I tell people is that if you can donate enough money to Project Sanctuary and show me that you did, you can pick me up. I'm fine with that then. And I call it Lift Brad, Lift Soldiers. And and so far I've only been doing it for a few months, and we've raised over $20,000 for Project Sanctuary. So it's a great charity. So if you come to any of my live shows and you want to lift up some troops and get a killer Instagram photo, donate to Project Sanctuary. It's a cause that's near and dear to my heart.
I love it, man. I appreciate you spending some time with us today. We've got one more thing before I let you go.
Okay.
We do after the show. So we're officially the show. We've rolled credits. All right. So that part's over. But we do something that's called the overtime. So it's a clip that probably won't be in the show. It's just something that goes on, you know, online or whatever.
Got it.
Your thoughts, because I've read some of them, on the Snow White movie. You had comments on the Snow White right. movie, and there were some concerns about it, and they're getting, you know, super open-minded and liberal, and yet still yes. Seven Dwarves. Yes. Your thoughts?
Yes. Yes. So this was sort of brought to life from Peter Dinklage, because Disney's doing the live-action remake of a lot of movies. They did it with Lion King and Beauty and the Beast and Jungle Book and all that. And now they're doing Snow White. And they announced that Snow White is going to be played by a Latina woman, which I thought, great, fine. I'm not one of these people that it's like when the trailer for The Little Mermaid shows up and it's like, what? It's a black Little Mermaid. It's like, who cares? What the, like, you're more like, it's like, well, the Little Mermaid isn't black. Mermaids aren't real.
No, you're cool with the fact that she's talking to the fish and lives underwater. Yes! But, you know, that person of color, you went a little too far.
Yes, there's a crab going under the sea. And you're like, yeah, that checks out. But then the Little Mermaid's black and now you're going nuts. Okay. But either way. So they said that Snow White is Latina now. Fantastic. And then, but then they're also still gonna have the dwarves in the film. And Peter Dinklage said, where he's like, are we still doing this? Like, are we still doing the seven dwarves? And it's strange because I have kind of a mixed mindset on this. Number one, completely agree with him. And I think that maybe you could still have the dwarves, but maybe just change it up a bit. So they're not just seven white dudes. Maybe you can have some female little people, because I don't want just seven white dudes out in a mine just by themselves. That sounds like a recipe for trouble. So, you know, like, I don't know, seven old white men hanging out by themselves, they'll probably end up doing a January 6th thing somewhere, you know? So I try not to do that, but, yeah. So let's maybe get some different races and different genders. Let's have all that. But at the same time, I want dwarves to be in the movie because that's a paycheck. Okay, so
right.
Not all of us have Game of Thrones money, Dinklage. So I would like to keep working, and I would like other little people to have acting roles. So yes, I want dwarves in the movie, but I'm totally fine with mixing it up a bit and giving more people more opportunities. Completely fine with that. The one thing I don't want is what they did in the Lord of the Rings movie and then in the Snow White and the Huntsman movie, where they cast tall people to play the dwarves, and then they spent hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of dollars on CGI to shrink them down.
Yeah.
I'm like, come okay. On.
It's like, come on. I can't even get that role.
Yeah, it's like, that. How is it offensive if a dwarf plays a dwarf? Like, that's our thing. That's all we have. We have Snow White. We have, because they've already essentially taken out all the elf roles, because they said the elves were offensive, so now dwarves don't get elf roles anymore, and now they're gonna take away the Snow White roles. Like, what's left? Come on, man.
Right. Don't advocate us. You're advocating us into unemployment.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be horrible. Like if they did a movie about Motown and it was like, well, we need some diversity, so let's put some Asian singers in Motown. It's like, that's not, no!
Except that would not shock me or you if they decided to do that.
So. At this point, exactly. There's helpful on the meter, and then there's, okay, we've gone too far. And that is one of those things where it's like, all right, with good intention, but we probably went a little too far with this.
Brad Williams, thank you for spending some time with us, man. I appreciate it. We'll see you when you're in Philly, September 30th through October 1st.
Thank you so much, Bill Anderson. Nice talking to you.
All right, man. You have a good one. Take care.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Take it easy. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast today. with comedian Brad Williams. Once again, I enjoy hearing all of the different stories, people's experiences, the things that make them them. And I think that's what's so cool about this format. You can extend it further. You get to learn more than just the funny things that they say on stage. You get to learn the things that inspired them to become the funny people who get to say things on stage. Remember to subscribe to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast. Just click that subscribe button right there where you downloaded this particular podcast, so you'll get notification every Monday when a new episode comes out. Also, if you're in Philadelphia and you would like to watch the show on TV, we are on Fox 29, 6:30 p.m. on Mondays. Of course, we also air on Fox Soul nationally on Mondays, and then stream on YouTube, so you can always find the various episodes. Reach out to me. I want to hear your feedback. I'm at BillAFox29 on all social media platforms. I would love to interact and respond to you. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you that whenever you can, to use your voice for good and have a good one.